Hello and welcome to Need to Know, your weekly investment podcast brought to you by the experts at Coutts. I'm Sarah Muir and I'm joined as always by Coutts CIO Alan Higgins. So each week on the podcast, we look at the three things investors need to know for the week ahead. So Alan, what do we need to know this week?
So Sarah, good morning. So I think we should focus on something that our clients are starting to ask a lot. What is the outlook for equities in this higher interest rate environment? What is the relationship even between equities and interest rates? One, because we've covered bonds quite in depth. Secondly, kind of related, kind of interesting, the Japanese equity market is kind of the world's strongest market right now. So what's going on there? And then just a little bit on data. This is prior to the UK inflation number. And interestingly, a big fall is expected. And then something strange happening in terms of in the US, in terms of the previously reliable US employment numbers.
Okay. All right. Then. Well, let's kick off then with this sort of theme that I know we've talked about in with colleagues inside the bank, this in the equities in a high interest rate environment. And really, I guess, why would you even bother investing in equities when you can get 4 or 5% on cash?
So that's a common question. So that's cash. I mean, the reason is it still works, if I put it in simple terms. So if I get very long term, equities compound at 9%, global equities, even the FTSE 100 over long periods. That's the main UK market that has been dull for years and so tends to outperform cash. However, the work that we've done, and to be fair, the work that also JP Morgan's done and the team here at Coutts have taken that data even further. The great question is what interest rate, is there an interest rate where the case for equities really does start to crumble?
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question. At what point is high interest rate too high to make investing in equities any sense?
So the number is 8%. Okay. But it's kind of interesting perspective. I think you can see straight away that from a common sense perspective, you just nailed it. You said, well, if I can get 4 to 5% on cash, why should I invest in equities? So from a common sense perspective, you would think there'd be an impact, but you need to test these things. And the statisticians, when they do that, and our in-house statisticians have done it, has actually found that the relationship is surprisingly weak until you get to this number of 8% on rates.
Okay.
So, you know, one would have thought, as you say, 4 or 5%, surely that's competition for equities. And it is, but doesn't necessarily affect the compounding equity returns. However, this number eight and above, what does it mean? It basically means that when we look at the data, the equity market gets a lot cheaper. The equity market needs to be cheaper. That's common sense and is backed by the data.
So how does that work then? Is that just because you're looking at sort of discounted sort of future earnings, or is it because it's more expensive for companies to service their debts if interest rates are higher? What's the mechanics behind that?
So the great thing about this, once again, you've heard me say this before, Sarah, is no one really knows. But we've got some pretty good theories.
We love a theory.
Yeah, all of what you said. I think so. Common sense, at the end of the day, being a shareholder, you share in the prospects of that company. And if that company, like many companies, has debt, even the likes of Apple has debt, if that debt is getting more expensive, then that debt is being, those returns are being diverted from the shareholder to the debt holder. So common sense, surely, especially when interest rates get high. So when they get as high as 8, that means corporations are issuing debt at 10. That sounds a lot.
Okay.
That's a lot of diversion from shareholders. So there's that. Secondly, there is, going back to your first point, well, if interest rates are 8-10, then I will put my money on deposit for 8-10. Alan, you just told me equities compound at 9. Well, I'm getting 9 on cash or bonds.
Yeah, without the risk.
And then the really sophisticated answer that you gave me, which is discounting of cash flows, that if you think of any share or you're a shareholder in a company, you have either direct cash flows from the dividend or implied cash flows from the earnings. And therefore, you need to discount those by a rate. And if the rate gets to be very high, 8, 10, then the valuation drops. So if I put it in price earnings ratio terms, what we see when basically rates go above 8, the price earnings ratio, I'm talking more of the US market here, the price earnings ratio of the US market needs to be 14 or below. Currently, it's 18. And we've defined price earnings ratios before. Do you think we need to do it again?
I think let's just have just a quick reminder of what we're talking about when we talk about price earning ratios.
Yeah, it's one of the many, but probably the most basic and standard metrics of valuing an overall market or a company. And basically what you do, you look at the value of the company, the price compared to its profits. So in simple terms, I gave you a number of 14. What would that mean? If a company, obviously this is a very small company I'm going to give, if a company is making £1 million a year, it should be valued, all else being equal, at £14 million. Now, today in the States, that company is valued at £18 million. So I suppose the good news in all this is rates aren't 8%.
Yes, unless you're a saver, of course.
Yeah. So rates aren't 8%, so therefore there's no need for the market to really devalue. But what I find with talking to clients, they like examples better than theory.
That was going to be my next question, because this is, we've talked a lot of theory, but I mean, okay, maybe not rates at 8%, but we've been here before, haven't we, with rates at sort of 4-5%. When was the last time that happened?
Yeah, so do you remember before the financial crisis, what were you doing then?
I do.
2002 to 2007, were you in finance?
I was I was teaching business English actually in Germany, so sort of adjacent.
Yeah. Well, even Germany had reasonable interest rates then. So look, the period before the financial crisis. So after the financial crisis, rates went to zero everywhere, basically, and stayed there. We had a brief uptick in the United States, but rates have been very, very low. But pre the financial crisis, pretty consistently higher rates. So, for example, in the UK, they averaged 4.5% between 02 and 07, the 5 years between 02 and 07. With a high of 5.75%. So it was a high interest rate regime. And do you know what equities did? Now, I was on CNBC, a bit of name dropping. I normally do Bloomberg, but I do a bit of CNBC. And the presenters there who are super knowledgeable, even they were surprised about how, when I told them how strong equities were then. Our memories had faded. And to be fair, even I knew equities were strong, but I didn't think they were this strong. So equities, global equities in sterling terms, compounded at 12%.
So over
higher
that
than the normal 9%. Yeah, over that 5 year period, 02 to 07. And would you believe even the hated UK equity market compounded at 14%? That's the FTSE 100. Okay. So yeah, it's an example. Look, is this going to happen again? Who knows? And the compliance warning will have to be strong, as always, Sarah, just a reminder. Will this happen again? Who knows? But it's evidence and an example that equities can perform over the longer run. This is nothing about the next 6 months. You know, that I'm not talking about the Coutts tactical view here, that equities can perform in a higher interest rate environment.
Okay. Is it fair to say that, just one final question, is this time different to 2002, 2007? I mean, what was different about then and now, or are they fairly reasonably comparable?
No, that's fair. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I was thinking, well, was there something unique about 02, 07? So, I mean, there's a lot going on here, but basically 02, 07, from a stock market point of view, we were recovering from a bursting of a bubble, the so-called tech bubble. So there was a bit of recovery there, but nevertheless, it's fair to say investors were very scarred of equities. I remember that very clearly. From an economic point of view, I think it's fair to say that was the start of the rise of China. The Chinese economy really started to power through. So everything, and of course, today the Chinese economy is much, much stronger than that. But it was a period of very strong Chinese economic growth, not particularly strong G7, if you like, the major economy growth, but China was strong. Was that a factor? I think to a certain extent in the UK with energy. I mentioned, so going back again, the UK compounded at 14%. Energy and materials companies, that was a strong era. But, you know, global stocks were strong. So every time is different. I just think it's, I think what we're getting at here, Sarah, is that for our listeners not to be complacent and think, oh, rates are 4 or 5, that's fine. You can miss out on markets. And also, by the way, we've talked before about surges in markets.
Yeah.
In that 5-year period, there was plenty of surges. There was one, yeah, for example, in 2003, where the market surged over 30% in 6 months.
Yeah,
so
crikey.
It's almost, we talked about it before, it's almost for clients getting comfortable with the nature returns and non-technical term, the lumpiness returns. Is just as important. But I think this is important knowledge to know that equities can still perform in a higher interest rate environment.
Okay. All right then. Well, that's good. Well, staying on the subject of equities, you want to talk about Japanese equities, and it looks like the Japanese indices at the moment are doing phenomenally well, aren't they? What's going on there?
They are, and just from a Coutts perspective, we're not pushing a particular agenda. We have some investments in Japanese equities. And I'm pleased to say that, you know, we've got a good market weighting, but it's not as if we have a huge amount of Japanese equities. So we're not being triumphant here, but basically the Japanese equity market's up 20%. And basically one of the just under 20% actually, but one of the strongest markets. And what's going on? Again, it's theories. No one knows for sure what's driving Japanese equities. But one, close to the China reopening, but not China.
Okay.
Japan has always exported a lot into China. Two, there's a bit of a push going on by the Tokyo Stock Exchange to basically shake up corporate governance, which we're big on here at Coutts. And basically, companies with very lowly valued stock and management doing nothing, the TSE, Tokyo Stock Exchange, is applying to name and shame. And that's got people interested. Warren Buffett's been for a visit and invested.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a lot going on. But Japan, I find interesting, Sarah, because I started my career in the 1980s. It was that long ago. The late 1980s, I should say. The late 1980s bubble. So I've seen both sides of Japan.
Yeah. And then, so you're not responsible then for the lost decade or lost decades that Japan experienced after that then?
Well, I worked for a company called Invesco MIM, or Invesco still going strong. And I think it's fair to say no, because I was just a young graduate just looking gormlessly on. Being a force to be a student and do my CFA, yes, the CFA did exist back in then. I do remember questioning the team and saying, why were valuations of Japanese stocks so high and so different from the rest of the world? And I got shut down very quickly, you know, with an argument saying that my CFA just doesn't equip me. Because what happened was in the 1980s, it's important to know, because we've just talked about equities, saying equities are right, even in this higher interest rate regime. But when can it go wrong? And it did go wrong in Japan.
Yeah.
Ridiculous valuations. Now, that's after a bubble. So huge returns. From the market basically tripled in pretty quick time in Japan, huge returns in equity and property. And the market basically went to 80 times earnings. We just talked about price earnings ratios. The US currently 18 times. I saw Japan at 80 times earnings. And the firm I worked for, okay, maybe I should take the blame because as a young graduate, I couldn't persuade my experts. They said that's fine because Japan is so different. And Alan, you know, your CFA books are not understanding. So I'm just getting my book of facts out because there was really some ridiculous overvaluations. You had some stocks at price earnings ratios of, like, here we go. Japanese Airlines, 400 times earnings. NTT, which still exists today, 200 times earnings. IBJ, a bank. So I think JP Morgan today is on 6 or 7 times earnings. IBJ, short for Industrial Bank of Japan, 140 times earnings. The likes of Toyota was actually okay. Ridiculous overvaluation, which people think it's about the economy. To a certain extent, it's about the economy. No, the poor returns of Japan was ridiculous overvaluation, which happened to that market. And it hasn't really happened elsewhere Briefly, we saw it in the US in 2000, but pleased to say we're not there. But anyway, Japan today, 12 times earnings. So yeah. 80 times earnings to 12 times earnings. And that's another reason maybe that Warren Buffett's interested. It's cheap now.
Yeah, and it's not just Warren Buffett, is it? I think Goldman Sachs have come out very pro Japanese equities as well, haven't they?
Yeah, Goldman Sachs have come out. I mean, it's interesting when you look at some of these mainstream global, to be fair, strong performing global equity funds, the likes of some of which we've had in portfolios before, the likes of Fundsmith. And, you know, look, Terry Smith, who manages that incredible track record, you know, I'm super humble in what I say here, but you will see almost nothing in Japan there. And that's common in global equity portfolios. So there's a bit of lightness in Japan. Lightness for a good reason, but I do wonder if people are going to follow Warren Buffett here.
Okay. And I guess just one last question on this. How much is potential changes to yield curve control, which we talked about when we had James Hawkes on, how much is that impacting equity markets? Is that positive for equities?
I suppose it's as a theory, it could be the fact that they've made one change to basically change the 10-year yield where they will control it. And it didn't have that much of an impact. But the bear story for Japan, I think I'm glad you mentioned that, the bear story for Japan, which is fair, is that they do really grip this and say, we're no longer controlling rates. And Japanese bond yields rise sharply. And that could be quite negative for Japanese equities. So I would see that more as an opportunity, but that's a fair kind of shorter term. For me, short term is anything within a year. Short term, yeah. That could be some short term pain for Japan. But look, I just think, because we talked about, I think there's almost a link between the two, is that equities for the long run doesn't really work when rates get very high. But counterexample is Japan. Okay, Japan's performing well this year, but people need to understand ridiculous overvaluation, and they had a bubble first. We've got no bubble right now in global stocks.
Yeah, okay. All right then. Our final point then, quick roundup of some sort of key data we've got coming out this week. I think we've got UK CPI out tomorrow, haven't we?
So a lot of people will listen to this after the CPI, and basically because of base effects, it's expected to fall sharply to basically just a little over 8%. We're just over 10% today. I'm talking CPI. So seems like good news. Again, people will look at the data. Again, as a reminder, that 10% sounds a bit shocking, and it is, of course, but on a core basis, when you strip out food and energy, we as the UK, are more in line with other countries, including even the United States. But it's interesting that food inflation has really become quite political, because food inflation, rightly, I believe the food manufacturers are going in to see either Rishi Sunak or Jeremy Hunt as we speak.
Okay. Well, that's the rate of inflation that really impacts everyone, doesn't it? I mean, it probably disproportionately impacts those on lower incomes as well.
That's the UK, and the US is like, but... I need to talk about employment because I've been proven wrong yet again.
And I quizzed you once a month or so ago about the fact that a lot of this data is often revised up. Is it ever revised down? And you were saying about how reliable jobless claims were as a piece of data. Now, apparently that's not always the case.
It's not the case. So just on the revisions for people who haven't listened before, that's generally true. If you look at data in a growing economic environment, growth is generally revised up. Why? Because it's hard to capture everything that's working well. However, in general, employment data is pretty strong. Why? Because either people claim for benefits, that's a clear fact, one, and also people being hired. Now, what's gone and happened? A whole load of fraud in Massachusetts. And so there's been a rise in jobless claims. It's a weekly data series where basically individuals claim for employment benefits. So quite a timely and good piece of data, and it's started to indicate deterioration in the employment markets. However, it's been skewed by fraud in Massachusetts, and the trend is still there, but I have to be humble by and say even initial jobless claims you have to be skeptical about. But it'll come out on Thursday. Have a look. There'll probably be a bit of commentary. People are even talking about doing initial jobless claims ex Massachusetts, and we shall see. But basically, it shows that the employment markets in the US are weakening, but much slower than people think.
I mean, how much can one state impact the actual country's jobless number? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, well, because what people are looking at, so the overall number, you're probably right, but what people are looking at carefully is the change week on week. And you know, if you're going to commit fraud, go for it big. So these people in Massachusetts have gone for it big, clearly. And apparently about half, rule of thumb, it was about 40 to 50% of the upward moving claims is fraudulent in Massachusetts. So that's the number. Okay. So it is an impact, and a little bit geeky, but just goes to show. I thought it's quite right. I should eat some humble pie.
Fair enough. Well, okay. Well, thank you very much. Now, let's just quickly round up before we get to sort of the housekeeping at the end. So we've got, we talked first of all about equities in a higher interest environment. And the fact is that even with interest rates at between 4.5% and 5%, equities actually still do reasonably well. It's not until we get to that, I would say, magic figure of 8% that you would start to question the wisdom of investing in equities. Japanese equities, staying on the subject of equities, doing very well at the moment. They're sort of bucking the trend as far as a lot of indices are going. And number of reasons behind that, certainly some changes to corporate governance, but certainly Warren Buffett has seen and identified an opportunity there. And we're not advising people to necessarily go and invest in Japanese equities, but we're just commenting on what we're seeing in markets at the moment. And then last but not least, we've got some important data coming out this week. We've got UK CPI due out on Wednesday, and expectations are that it will drop below 10%, that headline figure, fairly sort of substantially, maybe coming in around about 8%. So we'll be watching for that on Wednesday. And an important note about sort of US jobless numbers, it turns out there's been a serious number of fraudulent claims potentially in Massachusetts, which may well mean that when we see the jobless numbers come out on Thursday, it's going to look as if actually the number of claims has gone down, but that's probably just because they're revising those numbers because of what they've identified happening in Massachusetts. But interesting to see there that even jobless claims is perhaps not as reliable as we would expect it to be. A reminder that the views expressed in this podcast are not intended to constitute investment advice, are accurate at the time of recording, and are subject to change. Thank you very much, Alan, for joining me today. Don't forget to check out the podcast page on Coutts.com and subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. You can also access previous episodes, including a recent one we did with Jamie Bartlett, the man behind the highly addictive Missing Crypto Queen podcast series, and he talks about the three psychological tricks that scammers play on unsuspecting investors. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more Need to Know. Until then, bye for now.